22. Charlotte Boyer said, "Scrub the authorities. I'm going to be at Times Square when he lands." She inspected her wristwatch. 2 hours from now. Nick said, "You can't. The military and the PSS, I heard the newscaster," Charlie said. "Same as you. A dense, enormous mass of old men, numbering perhaps in the millions, has converged on Times Square and, let's see, how did he put it? And for their own protection, they're being removed by balloon copters to safer places, such as Idaho. Did you know you can't get a Chinese dinner in Boise, Idaho?" She rose, paced the room. "Sorry," she said to Ed Woodman, the owner of the apartment in which she and Nick were staying. "What do you say?"
Ed Woodman said, "Look at the TV screen. They're hustling everyone anywhere near Times Square into those goddamn huge 4D transports and flying them out of the city."
"But more people are arriving," his wife Elka said. "They're falling behind. More people are coming in than are being gotten out."
"I want to go," Charlie said.
"Watch on TV," Ed said. He was an older man in his early 40s, heavy-set, good-natured, but keenly alert. Nick had found his advice worth listening to. On TV, the announcer was saying, "Rumors that the largest laser gun in the eastern United States has been moved from Baltimore and set up near Times Square seem to have a basis in fact. At about 10 this morning, New York time, a large object, which observers said looked like a complete laser system, was landed by air on the roof of the Shafter Building, which overlooks Times Square. If, and I repeat, if the authorities intend to use a very powerful laser beam on Provoni or Provoni's ship, this would be the spot where the laser gun would most likely be placed."
"They can't keep me from going there," Charlie said.
Ed Woodman, swiveling his chair to turn toward her, said,
"Yes, they certainly can. They're using tranquilizing gas. They're knocking everyone out and then shoveling them aboard those big 4D transports like so many sides of beef."
"Clearly," the TV newscaster said, "the moment of confrontation will come when, having landed his ship and assuming he does so, Thoris Provoni exits from the ship and displays himself for what he undoubtedly expects to be an adoring public. His distress will be, shall we say, acute, to find no one there, just police and army barricades." The newscaster smiled amiably. "Over to you, Bob."
"Yes."
Bob Griswold, another of the endless gnat army of TV newscasters, said,
"Provoni is in for a disappointment. No one, repeat, no one will be allowed near his ship."
"That laser cannon mounted on the roof of the Shafter Building may give him a welcome," the first newscaster said. Nick had not picked up his name, but it didn't matter. They were interchangeable men, all smooth, all buttoned down, unable to lose their poise no matter what calamity occurred. The only emotion which they allowed themselves to express was an occasional wry smile. They were doing this now.
Charlie said, "I hope Provoni wipes out New York."
"And 70 million old men?" Nick asked. Ed Woodman said,
"You're too savage, Charlotte. If the aliens have come to destroy the cities, they'll destroy the old men rather than the new men out there in the country on those floating sky rafts. That would hardly coincide with Provoni's wishes. No, it's not cities they want. It's the apparatus, the thing that governs."
Nick said to him, "If you were a new man, Ed, would you be nervous right now?"
"I'd be nervous," Ed said, "if that laser cannon doesn't hurt him. In fact, I'd be nervous anyhow, but not nervous like a new man, no, indeed not. If I were a new man or an unusual and I saw that laser beam bounce off Provoni, I'd find a ditch to hide in. I wouldn't be able to get away fast enough. They probably don't feel that way. They've ruled for so long, held power for so long, that heading for a ditch literally and physically wouldn't enter their minds."
"If they gave all the news," Elka said severely, "they'd mention how many new men and unusuals have been leaving New York during the last 8 or 9 hours. You can see, look," she pointed out the window.
The skyscraper was blackened by a sea of dots, airborne squibs, radiating out from the downtown section of the city, their old and familiar stamping grounds.
Turning now to other news, the newscaster said, it has been officially reported that the noted new man, theoretician, and builder of the Great Ear, the first electronic telepathic entity, Amos Ild, has been appointed by Council Chairman Graham to a special post. Advisor to the Council Chairman, it is designated. Word from the enormous federal building in Washington. Ed Woodman shut the set off.
Why did you do that? Elka asked,
slender and tall in her inflated balloon trousers and fishnet drawstring blouse, her tawny red hair tumbling down the back of her neck. In some ways, Nick had noted, she resembled Charlie. They had been friends, he was informed, back into school years, back to something like the A's level, which was virtually infancy.
Amos Ild, Woodman said. There is a real strange one. I've been interested in him for years. Christ, he's considered one of the three or four brightest men in the whole soul system. Nobody understands his thinking, except perhaps the one or two in the same class. Near the same class, I mean, with him. He gestured, a screwball.
But we can't tell, Elka said. We can't follow their neutralogics.
But if other new men can't understand him.
Einstein was the same way with his unified field theory, Nick said.
Einstein's unified field theory was understood theoretically, but it took 20 years to prove it.
Well, when Great Ear comes on, we'll know about Ild, Elka said.
We'll know about him before that, Ed said. We'll know as we watch the government make decisions in this Provoni crisis.
You never were an underman, Nick said to Ed.
Afraid not. Too gutless.
Does it make you want to fight? Charlie asked, coming over to infuse herself into their conversation.
Fight? Against the government? Against the PSS and the military?
With help on our side, Nick said. The help of the non-terrestrials, such as Provoni is bringing, or so he claims.
He probably is, Ed Woodman said. There's no point in returning to Earth empty-handed.
Get your coat, Charlie said to Nick. We're flying to Times Square. Either that, or we're through with each other.
She got her own coat, a rawhide leather jacket, marched to the apartment door, opened it, stood.
Ed Woodman said, well, you can fly into the area and a PSS or army copter will grapple you and drag you down, and they'll run Nick's name through their computers and come up with the fact that the Black Pissers have him on their snuff list. So they'll shoot him and you can come on back here.
Rotating as if on an axis, Charlie re-entered the apartment, hung up her coat. Her full lips protruded in a grim pout, but she yielded to the logic. After all, this was why they were hiding out here, staying with friends of hers she hadn't seen in 2 years.
I don't understand, Charlie said. Why did they want to kill Nick? If it had been me, and we thought it was, all of us, I could understand that because that old goat was trying to get me into one of those infirmary beds for convalescing girls. But Nick, he let you go when he had you earlier. He didn't feel the need of killing you then. You just walked out of the building as free as the air we breathe. I think I know, Elka Woodman said. He could stand her leaving him, per se, but he knew where she was going, back to you. And he was right. You were.
I saw her and Denny, Nick said. If Denny... He decided not to finish the sentence. If Denny were alive, she'd be with him, not me, he thought. And that did not please him, in a sense. But anyhow, the opportunity for him was there, and many a man before in such situations had moved to take advantage of it. It was part of the expertly waged battle of sexual possessiveness, the look who I get to lay syndrome, carried to its logical conclusion. The opposition is snuffed. Poor Denny, he thought. Denny was so sure that if they once got into the purple sea cow, he could get away, get all three of them away. Maybe he could have. They would never know because they had decided not to be lured back by the cow. As far as he and Charlie knew, it remained on the roof field of the apartment building where Denny had left it. It was too dangerous to go back. They had fled on foot, lost themselves in the crowds of old men and releasees from the camps. New York, in the last couple of days, had become a mass of humanity which rolled, tide-like, toward Times Square, broke on the rocks which were the PSS and army barricades,
and then fell back. Or were flown off, God knew where. After all, Willis Graham had only promised to open the old camps. He hadn't promised not to build new ones. Charlie asked aggressively,
"We are going to watch on TV, aren't we?"
"Sure," Ed Woodman said, leaning forward and clasping his hands together between his knees. "Missing it is out of the question. They've got TV cameras on every roof in that region. Let's upon this occasion hope Provoni doesn't decide to grab the airways again."
"I hope he does," Elka said. "I want to hear him talk."
"He'll be on the air," Nick said. He was positive of it.
"We'll see everything, hear everything, but not as arranged by the networks."
"Isn't there a law against cutting into TV transmissions?" Elka said. "I mean, didn't he break the law when he cut off all the other TV stations and telecast from his ship?"
"Oh, God," Charlie said, giggling, her hand over her eyes. "Don't mind me, but it's too funny. Provoni returns after 10 years with a monster from another star system to save us, and he's arrested for tampering with people's TV reception. That's how they can get rid of him. That makes him a wanted felon."
It is now, Nick thought, less than an hour and a half. And all this time, he realized, as the gray dinosaur approaches Earth, they're lobbing missiles at it. They've stopped mentioning it to the public. They know the missiles aren't doing any good, but there's a mathematical chance that a missile will somehow penetrate the ship's shield, no matter what kind it is, that the creature in which the ship is wrapped will become tired or in some way inoperative, perhaps only for an instant. But in that instant, even a small missile could probably completely knock out Dinosaur. "At least the government is trying," he said to himself grimly. "As well they damn sure ought to be."
"Turn the TV back on," Charlie said.
Ed Woodman did so. On the screen, an old interstellar ship, its retro jets sputtering, was lowering itself in the dead center of Times Square. An antiquated ship, pitted, corroded, with jagged metal pieces bristling. The remains of once functioning sensory apparatus.
"He fooled them," Ed Woodman said. "He's an hour and a half early. Do they have their laser cannon ready to fire? God, he's got their timing off. They bought the 32-hour story absolutely."
Police copters and squibs hurried away like dancing gnats, avoiding the blast of the retrojets. On the ground, PSS Ossifers and soldiers scurried away, scrambling for cover.
"The laser beam,"
Ed Woodman said in a monotone, his eyes fixed on the screen.
"Where is it?"
"You want it to show up?" Elka demanded.
"They'll get it going sooner or later," Ed said. "Let the test come now. Jesus, the poor bastards. They must be scurrying around the roof of the Shafter building like ants."
From the roof of the Shafter building, a red beam of force bored straight at the now parked ship. Over the TV, they could hear its furious whine as it wound up, higher and higher in intensity. It must be almost on full now, Nick thought. And the ship remained intact. Something huge and ugly materialized about the ship, and he knew what it was. They were seeing the alien being, like a snail, he thought. It rippled slightly, extended two pseudopodia, oozed more directly into the path of the laser beam. As the beam bored at it, it became larger and more palpable. It's feeding on the beam, he realized. The longer they keep the beam on it, the stronger it will become. The TV newscaster, for one time in his life, disconcerted, blurted out,
"It seems to thrive on the laser beam."
His companion put in,
"A creature from another star system. Impossible to believe, but there it is. It must weigh thousands of tons. It's engulfed the ship."
The hatch of the ship slid aside. Thor's Provoni, wearing a gray underwear-like garment, emerged, helmetless, weaponless. The laser beam, redirected by the technicians operating it, moved until it focused on Provoni. Nothing happened. Provoni remained unaffected. Nick, peering, saw a web-like tent structure imposed over Provoni from the alien. The laser people were out of luck.
"It wasn't a bluff," Elka said quietly. "He did bring back a creature with him,
And it has great power,
Ed said huskily. Do you realize the strength of that laser beam? Calculated in ergs?
To Nick, Charlie said, what are they going to do now? Now that the laser beam didn't work?
In mid-sentence, the newscaster was abruptly cut off. There, standing beside his ship, Thor's Provoni lifted a microphone to his lips.
Hello,
he said, and his voice issued from the TV set. Provoni did not trust the networks, obviously. Once again, he had taken over the many channels, but this time their audio portion only. The video image still emanated from the network cameras. Nick said,
Hello, Provoni. It's been a long trip.